you know.
You're gonna sit here, and you're gonna listen to me, okay? I'm gonna tell you what I've been holding on to this whole marriage.
You're drunk.
How about this? You wanna join me?
Stop it!
Oh, this drink's gone.
Gavin, stop it!
Nope.
Stop it!
She is, baby.
You're drunk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to the Sweet Feathery Jesus podcast, the special movie club edition, where the members at SweetFeatheryJesus.com have forced us to watch a terrible movie. The movie this week that was discussed by myself, Belasco, SFJ member and moderator Booze, and member Spooner, who we haven't heard on the podcast before, the movie picked was Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married 2? And I have to tell you, it was an ordeal to get through. But we did have a lot of fun discussing it, so we hope you'll enjoy the podcast. We discussed for a few minutes at the beginning the 1995 Michael Mann movie Heat with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, and Booze kicks it off with us by asking us a question on how we feel about Ashley Judd.
Is she hot or is she not? Because I can't make my mind up with that woman.
In that movie, she is.
She gets two thumbs up for me.
Because I don't like plastic surgery, but
she could
sort them eye bags out.
Oh, you're talking latter day. You're talking current day. Or are you talking like in Heat?
I'm talking then. I'm talking before then. I'm talking ever since the first time I saw her.
Did you see her when she was singing with her mom?
I thought that was the other one.
All right.
Her mum's all right.
Oh, God.
I can't really remember Heat because I tried to watch it. When we were going to first do this, I tried. And really, for me, the only good bit is the big shootout in the middle.
Oh, you know? I love the part where Val Kilmer, where he's about to get caught, and Ashley Judd sends him some kind of signal or something, and he turns around. There was something I remember at the time seeing it where that moment was really cool, but, you know.
Yeah, but hang on, though. They're in the house. They're supposed to have the place staked out. He drives right up to the front of it, looks up at the balcony where she's out there, and she sort of just flicks the air out of her eyes and shakes her head.
Yeah.
And then he shoots off.
No.
That's it. I mean, they're not going to crack the case wide open with that kind of...
You do recall the movie very well, then, if you can remember all those details.
It's the most ineffective stakeout ever.
Yeah. We're going to cover everywhere in this house apart from the front.
You remember it far better than I, then I'll tell you that.
I can't believe they blew this thing up to 3 hours. I just could not believe it.
Heat was 3 hours.
3 hours?
It was like 2 hours and like 45 minutes if you take out the crowd. I mean, it was just long. And the first thing that struck me was like John Voight and his skullet. I was like, Jesus, why didn't you just save the money and hire Kris Kristofferson?
Well, if they had Kris Kristofferson in it, it would be 4 hours.
I just heard the word skullet.
But does anyone crack a smile in that fucking film at all, at any point? I don't think they do.
Well, unintentionally, yes.
You're talking about Heat or the shitty one that we just saw?
Heat.
I don't remember.
I know I didn't crack a smile.
The only time I cracked a smile is when I heard Jim Gaffigan start, and then it entered into SFJ lexicon.
I just started laughing to myself when De Niro said,
"Have no attachments, allow nothing to be in your life that you cannot walk out on in 30 seconds flat if you spot the heat around the corner."
I was like, how about this movie? I don't have a choice. one of the things is, I talked about how long it is, but my God, is it slow. It is so freaking slow. It was like watching Stephen Hawking trying to score a goal in soccer. You know, it was
I haven't got a problem with the slowness. That's not the problem. The problem for me is the way that like it regards itself as a really important film, and every little look is important, and it really takes itself seriously. And that's why it's so fucking slow, because you're looking at a building, then you're looking at someone react slowly, you know, and that's why it's so fucking long and slow.
And I think that's because of Michael Mann, who I usually like as a director, but my God.
Well,
the marketing went down, I think it killed it. Anything where they try to say De Niro, Pacino together. When that's sort of like the linchpin for the whole movie is those two together, you know it's going to suck ass.
But it didn't have to, though, did it? Because that scene,
never has.
When in the coffee shop, you should have. If you're going to have them two together, and it's a big deal, it's the first time, you know, two biggest actors of their generation, I guess. Sit them down, let the camera run, let them act. You know, in a two shot, it's cutting away here, cutting away there. It was like, I don't think you ever saw them in the same shot acting together.
Yeah.
You know, it was over the shoulder shot of him.
I don't remember
and him.
At all.
Yeah, it was like, what's it called? Patti LaBelle and Michael McDonald. You know, when they recorded that single. And he was in California, she was in New York. They could have done it like that.
Oh, God, Michael McDonald. Oh.
Yamo be there?
That was the B-side.
Yeah, and you know, you asked if anybody ever cracked a smile during this movie. I actually did. There was a point when Tom Sizemore is running through the crowd, and the crowd is screaming. And for just a brief second, I wondered, am I watching a movie? Because that's what they do today.
His false knob was hanging out of his pants while he's running through the crowd. The child's urine, unadulterated child's urine was pouring out the end of it.
So yeah, leave me out of the heat discussion, because I really haven't. I barely remember the cast. There you go. I didn't even remember that Sizemore was in that.
Yeah,
some
but
bitch.
You got to remember the TV speech.
Oh man, who gave it, and what was it all about?
Pacino was pissed off that his ex-wife's boyfriend was watching his TV.
I'm very angry, Ralph. You know, you can ball my wife if she wants you to. You can lounge around here on her sofa in her ex-husband's dead tech post-modernistic bullshit house if you want to. But you do not get to watch my television set.
For God's sake. Put the television set down.
Never cheated on you, bitch.
And Pacino,
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Pacino goes absolutely nuts to the point that when he takes the TV with him, gets in his car, drives away. Later that night, he just gets sick of it and just kicks the TV out of his car right onto the street. And I'm just like, what the fuck was the point of this?
And that's pretty fruity. And that was if I remember too, that was the beginning of that, or not in the beginning. It was like the second or third movie where he was exclusively going into that, as others have pointed out, that foghorn leghorn kind of delivery where you know.
Not only that, but the accent as well. What's going on with his accent? I was watching Insomnia the other day, right? Now, Al Pacino is a New Yorker, right? Ain't right. he?
I just remember the Stellan Skarsgård one. I don't even know they did it. I can't keep up.
It's not a bad film. Yeah.
Christopher Nolan did it. It's not that bad.
It's a good film. But Pacino's pretty good in it. He only does that stupid shouting thing about one time where he shouts for no reason, you know, just to liven things up. But he's got some kind of weird accent that he seems to have in all these films now. Well, it's like a southern drawl or some kind of New Orleans type.
Yeah, I can't identify it either. I wonder if he's just trying. I wonder if in every role he's trying to distance himself from the Godfather movies.
Oh, I think that what was that movie he did? The Scent of a
Scent of a Woman.
Ooh-ah. Scent of a Cunt. Ooh-ah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then that horrible Oliver Stone football one. He was the same doing this. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, fucking I forgot about that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, where they left a black dude's cock on the screen for what felt like 35 minutes. I was
I do have mechanisms that block that out of my. I mean, I hit a wrinkle in time when that. Fucking.
Yeah, I don't remember that either, Belasco. Are you sure you didn't dream that bit?
God, it scarred me. I was just like, oh, Jesus. So if you
might have been
video,
Tyler Durden was the projectionist.
Yeah. Well, I remember I mentioned the booze because he was saying how, you know, Booze Jr. now is at the age where he's watching, like, these, you know, movies, the 70s, the good stuff. And this actually happened with my kid brother, who is 2 years younger than me. And I had seen, you know, Midnight Express a couple of times. And this was back when there was, like, Select TV and on TV in Los Angeles, pre-cable and all that.
I still didn't watch that.
And, oh, my Christ, you never – wow, yeah, absolutely. And so, well, then the story won't mean much to you, but there's a scene where, you know, he's in a Turkish prison for life. That's not a mystery.
Right. I know the story. I just haven't seen it.
Okay, that. Well, his girlfriend somehow gets out there from, you know, he's in horrible shape. You know, he's got hair growing out. He just looks like an ape, and he stinks. And he's been around all these smelly Turks for, like, I don't know, at that point it was like 10 years. And so she, yeah, seriously, she comes out and they put her in a room with, there's glass separating the two of them. And he doesn't say anything. He just looks at her. And, well, he does. He tells her to pull her blouse down and he just starts punching the clown, like, feverishly. And then she starts crying while he's doing it because she's probably just disgusted, and then he makes her like push her tits up on the plexiglass. So what happened was we're watching it with my old man and my kid brother, and my stepfather, and since we were really young, well, I knew what was coming, and so that scene's about to come up. So I get up and I go into the kitchen and make some toast, and I listen to the background and I can hear what's going down, and it's my kid brother stuck there with my old man as this guy's just jerking up. And I hear my brother go, like tomorrow I was thinking maybe, you know, go down to the driving range, and he's trying to talk over it.
Just trying to distract.
Yeah, so I told Boots, get Booze Jr. to bring one of his buddies over to watch that. And then when that thing comes up, Booze heads for the kitchen and just laughs and so.
Get me mama over to watch it. That'd be a good one.
All right. Well, do you want to move on to the actual movie? Why Did I Get Married To?
Yeah, or... let me just say now that that's not grammatically correct, is it? That annoyed me about this. Shouldn't it be, why did I get married as well?
No. In America, it should be, why did I have to watch this fucking movie too? I think that's the problem.
I don't understand why they didn't name it, What For I Get Married, Motherfucker?
Oh.
And they actually put the title of the film in to the script, didn't they? But they did it. They threw it away.
Sometimes I wonder, why did I get married?
Why did I get married to?
You know, when he goes, damn, why did I get married? And she goes, why did I get married to? But it was like, they threw it away. They were so embarrassed with it.
Well, they even product placemented the movie title. Because, first of all, there was three scenes, and I remember counting it because they were so blatant. First of all, for the first 45 minutes, maybe half the movie, I couldn't tell one of those black guys apart because they were all yoked. They all had coats and they all wore specs and no shirts. So
I had that trouble too.
So I had to attach.
There's two of them looked very alike.
Yeah, so it was Janet Jackson's husband and the divorced, the already
and
divorced
Janet Jackson.
Husband. Yeah.
So I had to wait till each color guy got with his broad, and then I'm like, oh, that's okay, now I know who that guy is.
So maybe we should set up a little bit
Let's discuss a little. Yeah, and you know what? I don't care if you if you're going to watch this movie or not. We're going to spoil this thing for you.
Well, spoiler alert, but the whole you know, good.
You can't spoil meat. It's just there's no spoiler here.
My God, this movie.
How many couples are there? Is it four couples?
There are four couples.
Where are you going?
They're going on their annual vacation called the Marriage Retreat.
I want to go.
It's for grown-ups only.
That's right. Remember we went to Disney World and I told you? Not this time. It's going to be me and your mom, remember?
It's you, Aunt Pat and Uncle Gavin, Aunt Angela and Uncle Marcus, and Aunt Sheila and Uncle Mike.
Yeah, but this time it's Aunt Sheila and Uncle Troy.
What happened to Uncle Mike?
They got divorced.
And we didn't see the first one.
No.
But maybe that explained where they got all this money from.
Yeah, because I thought it was a science
heist or something.
I thought it was a science fiction movie when it started because I'm like, I thought it was a comedy. And I'm looking at like Lexuses and big houses like the Huxtables and all of them. And I'm something already. I'm like, all right, this is. I can't suspend my disbelief this long.
I had a hard time with it until the one guy couldn't find a job, and then I was okay. I can buy this now.
Yeah. See, the only believable part was he had some babies and no job, and he lived in Atlanta. And I'm like, okay, now there's a tendril that I can have to this movie. But quick on that product placement thing, one of those. Black guys right out of the gates, first thing, opens up his Viking fridge, of course, you know, they all have Viking fridges. So opens that thing up and takes out a Coke can, and he swivels it in his hand so the Coke logo is facing the camera. I caught that. And that
I haven't seen an actual can of Coke for a long time.
Oh, yeah, no. He spins it so that the logo is obscured. Then he cracks it, takes one sip, and then sticks the can back in there. And then the Starbucks cup's blocking the chick's faces in the coffee shop. And there was a bunch of others. There was a ton of others. It was really bad product placement all over the place.
I noticed that can of Coke only because I haven't seen anyone drink Coke out of an actual can for about 5 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's all bottles over here.
Oh, okay.
Drink them out of blood sausage casings.
Oh, man.
Now, that's the kind of racism I can't tolerate on this podcast.
All the other types we can deal with, but not that one. Oh, man. There were all kinds of little stereotypes that in a white movie just nobody would tolerate.
The woman.
Yeah.
For the main. Ghetto, loud, black woman who was like, yeah, you're a hoe.
Yeah.
He wants to get his hoe's number and, like, making a scene to the whole airport.
No, y'all got time. Yeah, go ahead, get her number, Marcus. You want to write a number down?
Thank you. Go ahead, write a number down.
Terry, no, Marcus on. Wants thank to get the hoe's number. No, Marcus. Marcus, come here, back. Come back here. Everybody, my husband, Marcus, want to get a hoe's number. Calling all hoes. It's a brother over there named Marcus that want a number. Come get the hoe's number, Marcus.
I'm a married man.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, there were two crack jokes in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And didn't you love how there'd be no way you'd know they were in an international airport without all those flags from every country dangling from the rafters? I mean, that was a nice touch because I thought maybe they were just getting on like one, you know, a little puddle jumper to, you know, Wisconsin to go see Taco Toe.
Yes.
Well, the one stereotype I didn't go with, though, was the names. I thought the names were disappointingly conservative.
Yes, they were.
Absolutely. They were way too up the middle. That was another science fiction aspect.
But I think they made up for it when one of the black women said she wasn't going to tip.
It was redundant. A lot of the redundant dialogue that I found in there on that one.
Yeah, I guess it was the doorman or the bellhop or whatever.
Well, they didn't even talk to him, let alone tip him. So I don't know what we take from that. The all black, you know, servants of this Bahamian island.
Yeah.
You know, are.
I don't know how many of you have ever seen a couple, but I have never seen a black man ask his black wife or girlfriend permission to go jet ski.
Well, I've
every one of them asked permission.
The only time I've
permission
ever
to go and sit on the jet skis.
The only time I've ever seen a black guy on a jet ski was in like Grand Theft Auto. So there's no way. That was another one. I'm like, there ain't no black guys on the jet skis. Can we get on with this? Something real happened here.
Well, the thing is, like, what, I don't even know their names. I think it was like Alan and Nigel or something like that. I don't know any of their names, but
there was a Gavin.
Oh yes. Yeah, every yeah, right when I think right, Gavin
O'Shaughnessy,
raised yeah. in Connecticut, born and bred, Ivy League.
On the playground is where he spent most of his days.
Nice Irish kid, yeah.
Tyler Perry's name was Terry.
Yeah,
yeah,
and one of the kids was called Kenya. Yeah.
Well, The Marcus thing that bring there was a moment where his wife I still can't believe I'm talking that I actually watched this.
This is the funniest thing about it. Me thinking of you two sitting there watching this shit.
Nothing about it. So you know seriously, like I'm getting very fatalistic in my older age. I'm going to be on my deathbed and go, oh, just if I could only have 2 hours. And I will come back to this movie and fucking Belasco. You know, so she's sitting there, you know, she's, you know, suspicious of him and this and that. And, oh, that was over the top. But I loved how she says she's checking his time card, make sure he's working hours. He said, the guy's a TV broadcaster.
Yeah, he's punching in, punching out.
Punching the clock, getting paid right. by the hour. You know, that was great.
Yeah, but there were a few little plot points like that that, you know, they didn't really relate to the real world.
No.
Like, for people who haven't watched it, which is, like I say, hopefully everyone else apart from us.
Right.
You've got this couple where she's really loud, jealous black woman, and he's a geezer who's got bigger tits than Janet Jackson, because you saw that in the first scene.
Yes.
It was like Janet Jackson's tits popping out, and then there was this geezer sitting on a jet ski pushing that. But they were all doing that, though, which is what makes me think that this was like Tyler Perry as well. He's very in touch with his feminine side. I know he dresses up as an old woman, but I figure that this film is kind of like aimed it at black women.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of tell that.
Oh, this was a black chick flick.
So you got all the dudes with their tits out.
He covered every black, generally speaking, every black activity recreationally. Like, you know, they were all fishing for marlin. I mean, you see that? That's the huge thing. That was great. You guys remember that scene? And all the great jokes?
Yeah, the big marlin fishing.
I kept asking, where are the cane poles?
The jokes, I can't. I had to read a review on one of these, and it was some, you know, like BET offshoot blog. I don't know what it was, but they're talking about, you know, the great comedy. The lines were so funny that they sounded like they were improv'd and not written. While they're on the fishing boat, yeah.
You it was like a
Budweiser commercial that lasted about 18 minutes.
True. Well, I think a lot of it did seem to be improv, though, but not in a good way. It was like you could tell, like, there's a scene where Janet Jackson has to run after, what did he do? I can't even remember what he did. Oh, they were just getting a divorce because they'd, like, fallen out.
Yeah.
But then he had the audacity to want half of the money that she'd made with some book.
She was a psychiatrist that wrote a book about marriage and relationships or whatever. And that
right.
book, that book apparently sold very well. And when they were getting divorced, he wanted half of her book royalties. Yeah. And she was like, motherfucking
half,
no.
Janet. Yeah. Yeah, he wanted half, and she was not having any of it.
No, she was willing to. No, he's talking about a quarter of a million here, a half. She's like, take it. But that, what was it, like 400K on the book? Okay, that's, you know, that's where the love stops, man.
And this kind of sunk, because at first when we saw Janet Jackson, she was just like smiling, and it's obvious she couldn't act. You know, just the way she was reacting to people turning up at this beach house, she weren't believable then. So when she had to go completely doolally and smash the gaff up with a fucking golf club, you know, that she couldn't really pull that off. And also,
another great sport. Yep.
But it was hard for her to really get the, you know, the dramatic impact when A, she can't act, and B, you've got Tyler Perry's in that scene. And bear in mind, he'd written this film, produced and directed it, and he's in the scene.
Is that Tyler Perry? He was her husband? That's the guy we're talking about here?
No, he was over at the house at the time.
He's the geezer with a Coke can at the start.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's there. She's smashing the place up, and it's supposed to be really, really a heavy scene. She's having a nervous breakdown.
What makes you think you deserve a dime of my hard-earned money? You want to fight?
Patricia, wait.
You want me crazy?
Wait.
I'll show you crazy.
Wait,
go. Wait a minute.
Patricia, wait a minute. What are you doing?
And he's there doing the, you know, the Fresh Prince kind of double take moves. He looks like something out of a Lauren Hardy film.
Oh, well, the whole set looked like the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. And I was waiting for Kid and Play to start throwing a party. They had all the neon and pastel colors. It would look like right out of like 1992. Everything, especially when they get to the Bahamas and they're shoving those colors down your throat. And,
right,
that was unbelievable.
It did look 90s. You're right. It did look 90s.
And we should clarify that, yes, in the beginning of the movie, they go to the Bahamas, but they spend the last half of the movie after they've left the Bahamas. And for some reason, Lou Gossett Jr. lives in the Bahamas now. I don't know.
No. I have some. No, that's not what happened. What happened was they were filming. This is what I thought. Cocoon 3 was going on. They were shooting that next door, and here comes Lou Gossett, and then I don't know who, you know, some old Cicely Tyson.
Yeah.
They come walking in with the gray hair out of nowhere, and they're going to start telling these, you know, the mild black couples all having their little Mai Tais, all the, you know, the sage wisdom of marriage and keeping it together. And then and the fire go off in the background at the end of the sermon. That was just that.
Well, that's it, because it's very much a film of two halves, ain't it? So you have the bit where they go out to the Bahamas and they're all going to get together and say why they love being married to each other.
Yeah, that's the whole married. They go up on this little platform and explain, da 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 da, this is why I love, this is what made me fall. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, and Cicely Tyson looks like she's just come fresh off fucking Serpent and the Rainbow. She looks like a zombie. Lou Gossett Jr., what's going on with him? I know he's a black dude, but he had like big black patches on his head, like proper black.
And he put on about 400 pounds. I mean, I go back to An Officer and a Gentleman, and I used to always say to people, like, whatever happened to Lou Gossett Jr.? He must have really fucking pissed somebody off, because he had a hell of a career going back then. And then I see him turn up in the, you know, Cocoon 3 segment of this movie. unless that's already been made, then make it 4.
When they turn up as well, it's like the loud chick, who's, you know, ranting and raving about something, and then all of a sudden she's covered in what we think is sand, but no, in a direct rip from Big Lebowski, it's some dude's ashes. So then she goes and flaps about in the sea behind them while they're having this nice little chat in a very, very extended kind of shitty comedy segment, which is also like, you could tell that they said to her, right, all you got to do is go in the sea and jump about like you're disgusted for 15 minutes.
Oh, God. Wasn't that short?
Let me tell you something. Punch Drunk Love came in under 90 minutes, and it was a masterpiece, all right? This thing was longer than fucking Reds. And I remember I had to go and there was an intermission in that movie. This went well over, too, and – seriously, I'm not, no hyperbole. Every minute felt like about 5. So I don't know. I felt like I killed my whole fucking day on this stupid thing.
It was excruciating.
It's a free day for me.
when they were doing the sob stories, you know, on the platform explaining why they got married, I just, that last couple that went up when they were announcing their divorce and stuff, I was just, I just wanted to add fart noises just to try to make it somewhat interesting.
Well, that was the point, you know, that was the gear change, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we go into like a real, like, expect to see Farrah Fawcett come up as the beaten wife, you know, in
yeah.
the second half. It was just completely different.
I did find it funny when all of a sudden the fireworks started going off, like, yay, they're getting divorced.
Something's happening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I thought... Well,
there was a bit... Sorry, Spooner. There was a bit when Janet Jackson and her husband are up talking about, you know, how their kid died. That's the bit at which we cut to Tyler Perry kissing his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great editing. And, you know... I love how it went from sort of, like you said, in the beginning, it was, you know, oh, this guy's, you know, he's the Black John Hughes. And I don't mean the director. I'm talking about this kid I went to high school with. Good shit. Anyway, then you go from that kind of movie. Then all of a sudden he think it's like you're watching The Big Chill. Hotel New Hampshire, you know. Oh, is that what this is now? And then it's like, then the guy thinks he's John Cassavetes out of fucking nowhere. And then Ingmar Bergman with the scenes from America. I'm like, dude, oh. And then all the good laughs I got out of it and all those, you know. Whew.
Well,
I'm really in pain.
When Janet Jackson and her old man start splitting up and he comes in, he's got all his stuff, he's picking it all up and he's walking around the house swigging from a vodka bottle in his vest and tracksuit pants.
Yeah.
And she goes,
"You've been drinking again, haven't you, Gavin?"
Well, that was the second tendril to making me feel like this might be a little real is when he started, you know, he just starts flinging that vodka all over her.
Yeah,
I'm like,
well, yeah. Tell that
if
was
it was
beautiful.
Hennessy was what they needed, then I would have been there. But
remember when he
hits
her face as well?
Yeah, he throws her on the couch. Yeah. He gives her a couple of, you know, hammer fists, and I'm like, all right, now I'm buying this.
Yeah. And he starts – my favorite part was the fact that he started flinging vodka on her when she's standing next to the open flame in the fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she never learned from what happened to her brother.
Oh, God.
And then I love then what is like Chode Monkey got out of nowhere as the guy that looks like Charlie Murphy.
Yeah.
He's got cancer and then it's all indicated by, you know, he grabs the dude's wrist and his hand's shaking a little bit and we're all supposed to know that means cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, it's a 2-hour film, right? And the first half of it is taken up by this bullshit, you know, why we're so glad we're married.
Yeah.
Then the second half, things like that happening, there's plot twists, you know, real, you know, cancer comes along and a car crash in 2 seconds flat.
And Janet Jackson's husband goes all Hannibal Lecter.
And that bird wearing the tent goes, don't hit him, he's got cancer, I'm taking him to chemo.
Wait, Roy!
What? How could you be here?
Help me.
Do you think I need him to get a job?
He's got cancer. I'm just taking him to chemo, man.
I don't care.
Maybe I don't know if the audience is following.
Yeah,
this,
and I love that she lets him. He kicks the living shit out of the guy for about 12 minutes before she decides to tell him that the guy's got cancer too. That went on, I don't know, I remember it was 3 kicks in the sack, a couple of shivers, a couple of kicks in the face, and then she steps in.
Yeah, and the reason why he did that, just for the audience and stuff, is because this is the woman that was already divorced and remarried, and her ex-husband showed up in the Bahamas, so She finds out later in movie that her ex-husband has cancer, and apparently she's helping him. She's helping him get chemo, but she also asks him to help her new husband get a job because he's the unemployed one. And I'm just my favorite part of that scene was when he said, "We should have never left Colorado." I was like, "My God, you're an unemployed black man, and you leave Colorado? Like Atlanta doesn't already have a shortage of unemployed black men?"
Yeah, and you know it wasn't Denver. They wanted you to think it was Aspen too.
Right.
You know, and then the one of them was, I remember catching this and it made my head whip around. Like, oh, he's an architect. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, now I'm buying it.
That's Janet Jackson's husband.
Oh, is that right? And then he built that house.
I never found that.
That house in Colorado that looked like a catfish. Very famous, very famous architect.
When cancer geezer was getting beaten up, I was expecting Denny to come walking in, you know, out of the room.
Yeah.
The Tommy Wiseau film, you know.
Yes.
Because it really had descended to that level.
Descended is a good word for this whole movie. Like if people say this had gravity, I mean it had gravity that went right to the molten core at the center of the earth.
It had an event horizon. What are you talking about?
It fell in early too. The ending, that whole Janet. Well, yeah, no one's going to watch this. And Janet Jackson freaking out. And then it couldn't get more contrived. When Chode Monkey goes out, and what did he look like? He worked in a preschool. I don't know how he's driving a fucking Porsche. he comes rolling out of, you know, preschool.
It was like a little strip mall location.
Yeah.
Well, let's take this back. What actually happened there? She's so angry that he's going to actually try and get this money off of her.
Right,
she arranges for like this. She takes a big birthday cake into his office, right? I ain't making this up, everyone who's listening. This really happened in the film. She takes a big birthday cake into his office, right, and goes, "Oh, everyone, I want you to sing happy birthday to my husband." So they all gather around. Then there was probably the best bit of acting was where she sang happy birthday completely flat. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Like they said to her, "Janet, we know you're a really good singer, but for realism, we want you to sound shit at this point." So she did.
They should have had fucking Jill Scott sing it, for Christ's sake.
And then, like, RuPaul bursts out the cake, which is like the ultimate insult, apparently, to a black dude, having a gay person burst out of your birthday cake. So he fucks off to his car. But his car is parked about half a mile away. And this is one of those improv bits where Tyler Perry's obviously said to Janet Jackson, "All right, you've got to chase him and call him names until he gets in at the car," and then he drives off.
Run, Gavin. Run. Run like a little girl.
Yeah, you
run
really
like
have issues,
Patricia. Run like
the
little bitch you are. At least you look like
that,
a little
okay?
girl.
You need to
Turn
handle
around.
That, woman. You need to
like
handle your issue.
You know what? You are a bitch. You know that? You ingrate.
You're going to come by my job?
How dare
you, know
you try to
I've
take
to
all
to
my money?
I've got
How
nothing
dare
to say
you
to you.
Try to take all my money? Go ahead. Look at you run. Come on. Face me. Face me. You ingrate. You selfish ingrate.
Well, this takes forever, doesn't it?
She just
calls him an ingrate. That's about it. Like 20,000 times.
There should have been a moving walkway for him. He would have got there quicker.
Yeah, and then he gets the irony. He gets hit by that giant KFC truck, T-bone, and you're like, okay, is he dead or is he? Then it cuts to shivering ankles wearing those horseshoes. That was literally the cut. So they cut from by the KFC delivery truck, bam, in his Porsche to the hospital with the wiggling pumps. And then you're like, oh, you know, is he going to die? And I'm going, and all the everybody gathers around there. And I'm like, it can't get worse. And
you should say he got sideswiped as well. And this is in America, so he was on the other side of the car to what he would be in over
here.
Over here, he might have died.
Especially in that car.
That scene should have been the first scene, and then work from there. 3 down. Then we have so you're like, oh, is he gonna die? The best part, I'm gonna jump forward here, was it was like the end of She's Having a Baby. Beautiful cameo. Where a year later she's standing in the same position where she saw him get hit by the truck. And then I think it was you got Anderson Cooper comes in and says, oh, God, your book saved me. And Liev Schreiber, John Lovitz, Alan Alda, and The Rock.
Well, let's build that up a bit more because I think it deserves more.
Janet Jackson's husband gets smashed by the truck. That's first of all, he gets smashed by the truck because he's upset about the birthday thing. And then they go all to the hospital and the absolutely cliche part of Janet Jackson going, I never wanted this to happen. I didn't want to end up like this. And then she actually uses the line, love one another.
Love one another. She pushes them. She physically pushes them up so they cuddle each other.
And everybody hugs. And then all of a sudden they end up in the Bahamas with Janet Jackson's now dead husband in a plastic bag. Did you notice that?
Three plastic bags. He was a big dude, wasn't he? Yeah. He was pumped.
Oh, God. So they go back to the Bahamas to spread his ashes like the loud one got doused in by Lou Gossett.
Oh, I think I fast-forwarded that little last bit to make the pod. I really came in under the wire on this one.
So anyway, yes, Booze, please build up the special appearance by the special guest.
Well, then now she's had even more pain and suffering. She can make more money out of it by doing these lecture tours. So she's just done a lecture and come out of some kind of, you know, educational establishment. And then this woman comes up and goes, oh, Janet, which ain't her name, but I can't remember what it is in the film. Janet, you went so quickly, I've been trying to catch you. But she somehow comes from in front of her. She was just standing there by her car waiting for her. So I don't know how that happened. Some kind of fucking time warp. But and then she goes, oh, I hope you don't think I'm being too forward. This is a year later, and we know that because we've had the caption up on the screen.
Yeah, real slow fade out, too.
Hope you don't think I'm being too forward, but here's this dude. You've changed his life. He wants to meet you. And then we see him come up, and we know, oh, who's this going to be then? What's the big reveal going to be? We see his shoes. We see his trousers. We see his ass. We see the back of his head. And I was hoping it was going to be Kenneth Branagh. But it weren't.
or that midget with the barrel shoes that keeps running into you.
My nemesis. Yeah. No, it was The Rock.
Yeah.
And it was like, what the fuck's he doing here? And like, you can't have your cake and eat it, Tyler Perry. Look, either this film is supposed to be serious or it's supposed to be a comedy. If it's a comedy, then fine. You've made me laugh and The Rock's ended it. And that's the funniest bit of all. But I don't think that's what you were after, really.
I think in Why Did I Get Married 3, I think The Rock is going to drop the people's elbow on Janet Jackson.
What I can't believe, honest to God, jokes aside, I honestly never heard of this cat before. I had to ask Booze who he was. He wouldn't answer me, so I had to look it up. And then I'm realizing that through all the jib-jabbing about this fucking movie that it's a sequel. Now, I get stuck watching this, grinding through this fucking thing today. And I, honest to God, I'm trying to reverse engineer this movie I just saw to where there could have been a prequel. Like, how? I just can't get my head around that. Like, how did even the first one get made to get to where we were to this one? I mean, we all know sequels are bad, but, like, there could not. I can't even imagine how bad the first one would be. I don't know how I don't know anything about this guy. I just know none of his flicks again.
But like I said to you earlier, though, Spooner, that this is the first Tyler Perry film to be released at the cinemas in the UK. You know, so that is why this one? Why
Tyler,
now?
Tyler Perry can make a 2-hour movie of nothing at all, but Leighton Meester filleting guys. And I ain't watching it.
He's made 12 films now. And he's obviously, you know, he must be doing all right.
So what would you say the moral of the movie was?
I'm going to bite my tongue on that. I'll let Booze go first.
I think the moral of the story is if you're a black woman, then you can kill your husband virtually, and then get off with the rock, and it'll all be all right in the end.
Wrapped up in a neat little bow. I have to concur. When I tried to boil it down, I boiled it down to act crazy, get your husband killed, date a wrestler, and that's pretty much it.
I boiled it down to Zegarid over the counter, two pills, and a little water with baking soda in it, and that barely stopped the stomach acid.
We didn't even really touch on the ghetto woman.
No, we really didn't. And I was really thinking that because
she was New York from Flavor of Love, and that's all we need to say about her. If you've ever had the misfortune of seeing that,
hey, where's Marcus at?
Excuse me, ma'am.
Marcus,
ma'am, you can't go out to get in.
What's
this,
Marcus? Marcus,
lady, we're live.
I don't give a damn about you being live. How you doing, Rodney? Marcus, who the hell have you had at my house, huh? On Tuesdays and Thursdays at noon, Marcus.
Marcus is nasty behind, has the nerve to have some hoes with them little wide receivers with them tight ends having touchdowns up in my bed. You nasty ass. I'm so sick of this. Marcus, who you have in my bed?
Yeah, and she was actually interesting in that, of course, Tyler Perry tries to throw you a curveball in that, oh, this is definitely the guy that's cheating on his woman. And of course he wasn't. It's way too high. It's Tyler Perry's wife that's been cheating on him.
He throws curveballs like Dave Dravecki. Those are Tyler Perry's curveballs.
Nobody saw that one coming. No.
And I love the really, really labored thing at the start, the little running gag where, hey, this dude works on like a sports show. All he does is talking football metaphors, and the rest of us don't understand it.
Yeah, man, and it was Mike that led us to believe that Sheila couldn't conceive, that she couldn't have the baby. Mm-hmm. And when all the while, it was his players on the sideline not being able to make the draft. There you go again.
Marcus, are we going to need an NFL dictionary to hang with you this weekend?
Right. I'm English. I understood every single one of them.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. And what black guy doesn't? He's like, do they all go, do we need an NFL dictionary to English dictionary? Like, yeah, because you're so into cricket and croquet that, you know, you couldn't possibly get an NFL reference.
Well, at that point, we cut away to Nigel sitting on his jet ski for about 7 seconds as he laughs at the gag, so we know that it was supposed to be funny. Then we go on to the next little bit of improv.
All I know is that, as I told Booze, I could have made an entire pizza out of snappy batches and sit and watch this.
Yeah, and Ghetto Woman was great because she kept suspecting of Marcus, now the football commentator on TV, of going to leave her for a cheerleader. I kept thinking, well, yeah, I'm sure a cheerleader would have a softer voice than you, you loudmouth bitch.
Well, this is the thing, because he's with that woman. He's ripped like fucking, you know, a wrestler. She's this skinny piece of shit with, she's got no nose. She's just basically got like two holes in the middle of her face, like someone shot her twice, you know. Plus she never shuts up, and she never goes below 50 fucking thousand decibels.
No, she doesn't.
And she's suspecting him of cheating to the point where she walks on the set of his presumably live, I don't know why,
yes, live
live sports roundup show.
Well,
the provided
he punched in for that particular
episode. That's right. She could check his time card. That's how she knew that he was there. Right. So she turns up, and she's clever enough to, you know, she records all the mileage on his motor, so she knows exactly where he is. But she can't differentiate between a text and a phone call on his iPhone. He gives her his iPhone.
She's been bitching about the whole movie.
Another inconsistency. It wasn't a cricket, so I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
she wants the password to his phone, so she can check up. At which point, of course, he's going to run out and get another phone anyway, so, you know, that's completely redundant plot line.
Right.
But he gives her the phone, and it's an iPhone, and she's been answering it all day to some hoe on the other end who's not answering. And then there's this big elaborate build-up until he goes, Jesus Christ, Angela, they're texts.
Wah, 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 wah. And when all she had to do for that password, grab a stupid phone and just type in fucking Scarface and bingo, you're in. Like, did that have to be a big mystery? The riddle of the Sphinx to get into that jerk-off's cell phone?
Oh, God.
By the way, she's saying at that point she's going, the children are sleeping upstairs. And then she goes off on one again, like, with the 50,000 decibels. What a fucking... Jesus Christ. Every time they go out to eat with her as well, she's causing a scene in every fucking restaurant and bar they go to.
But of course, did you notice they were in, like, it was like Le Dome, you know? They're hitting them five-star fucking restaurants, and homie doesn't have a job. And they're sitting there ordering fucking aperitifs and caviar like they do.
Yeah, and she's shouting her fucking tits off in there, and no one's saying boo to her. There's no maitre d' coming over and say, look, if you girls can't behave yourself, I'm afraid I have to ask you to leave.
Now, I'd love to see the English, for a parody, just the English version of that with all the politeness. Like that YouTube video of the guy getting sucked, the kid gets sucker punched really hard and goes, I can't believe you just did that. Like, I want to see that version of this movie, or at least of that actress.
I ain't going to listen to it.
Belasco, whatever you do, don't forget to insert, like, because I didn't know how to feel through each scene, so the score we didn't talk about.
The electric piano.
There was Rhodes piano. There wasn't a moment in that movie where there wasn't some melodramatic score under it. Even as the dialogue moved along, like when you're watching the Brady Bunch and they're sneaking in the backyard and you got that tune. And then, the dad catches him, Peter jerking off in the treehouse, and you got that tune. That was like this movie every minute. There wasn't ever silence. It was always score.
And soul music has fallen so far.
Oh, yeah. Luther Vandross music without the lyrics all the way through this fucker.
Well, I don't know if you noticed at the start, because I didn't realize they were in the Bahamas until I heard the reggae music. That was the signifier for me. I thought, oh, hang on. Yeah, sunshine, beaches, black servants. What was going on?
Oh, it's a bit of Bob Marley. Right. With umbrellas.
And you know what? I was watching it. I watched the credits as well. And I actually went to the Bahamas to film that.
You watched the fucking credits. Are you kidding?
I can't believe you did it. I had to turn it
off.
That's
like putting mustard on your fucking Philly cheesesteak. You watch the credits to that movie.
I'm serious. I couldn't tell if what was scrolling up was a P or a B, and I turned it off.
I wanted to know whether they actually went to the Bahamas to film that, when it could have quite easily, for the standard of that film, it could quite easily have been filmed in a fucking...
It was Dade County, man. It was South Miami.
It could have been filmed in the back of a lorry. With some sand thrown down in a big light. Well,
there was some process shots in there that were really bad, too, like on the beach, especially when the ocean was in the background. One of the muscular black guys with shades and a goatee was talking, and, it was clearly, right, that guy. And it was, clearly
Nigel.
It was shot in the studio. Nigel Cavendish, he was great.
The third.
And his father, the Admiral. eating bird's eye fish and chips. Captain Birdseye.
Did any of you have any favorite lines from the movie that you can remember?
That part that came up where it said the end and then the credit. That was fucking beautiful.
My favorite's got to be that Janet Jackson. What was it he said? What did she say? You've been drinking again, haven't you, Gavin? As he's seriously wandering around. Fucking hell.
Wandering around with a box in his hand and a vodka bottle.
Thanks, Booze. You reminded me of my favorite line was when his buddies come back to get him back into the pad so he can get his golf clubs and his croquet set
and his cricket mallet.
Yeah, so he throws a big potted plant. He throws a pot, you know, terracotta pot through this giant plate glass window. And they're all shocked about it. And what the one guy says is, he goes,
"This dude just threw a ficus through the window."
He's actually, we're learning botany in this too.
Oh, it was a ficus.
He had to point out that it was a ficus plant, what he threw.
And I have to say, that helped me suspend disbelief. I was like, okay, breaking, entering. I can do this.
Right. But then the ficus plant identification took
Then that just threw it out the window.
When I heard he threw ficus through the window, I thought it was one of his kids.
Best line for me was guy running up to the beach for the first time and seeing, looking out on there on the ocean and yelling, "Jet skis!" That's all I needed. That was my favorite line.
I think my favorite was after Loudmouth showed up on the set of the Man's Loud TV show. And they're off on the side arguing during a commercial break. And he just so over the top looks
oh,
at
her. Oh, yeah,
and
he went
says,
for it, didn't he? Yeah.
"You're so damn evil!"
My God damn, that was terrible.
Oh, God. And, you know, these guys that go to these fucking film schools, and you got, you know, and Spike Lee's just as bad in his own way, but Spike Lee demands that he be taken seriously. And apparently I read something where Spike Lee's getting on this guy because he's making more money than Spike Lee's masterpieces like Girl 6 and whatever the fuck he's been doing.
This made me look at Girl 6 and think that it is a masterpiece.
I don't know, man. They're both just throw them in the same. I don't know. They can they can argue all they want. I'll never watch one of those again. And count me out of any bad movie podcast in the future.
sorry, mate. We got to watch Madea Goes to Jail.
Because it's more like crawling time, not running time.
There have to be some rules. Like, I ain't watching, you know, Andy Warhol's Empire State Building film. For this shit, no way.
Oh, what about Frog on a Wire? Oh, okay. Did you guys? That was that frog that tries to climb. You know, we used to climb across the World Trade
Center. Oh yeah,
bird shit on his fucking head. You know, that was one of the hardest movies I've seen. I mean, I just can't do it. There's even bad documentaries, so leave me out.
I ain't seen that. I heard it was good though.
What, Frog on a Wire?
Yeah.
Have at it. Well, you know, you're thinking of that, your favorite one, the Falling Man, that the BBC released.
Well, obviously, when I heard it was a frog in a wire, I was hoping that would happen.
All right, fellas. Yep. We've discussed pretty much every aspect of the movie that could be the least bit interesting. What do you guys give it as a rating?
Unequivocal B+.
It's the worst film I've ever seen. B+.
I gotta say, it's a really, really difficult, but I'm gonna have to give it the B+ just for the stereotypes.
It was so close to Woody Allen's movie Interiors. I have to go B+.
I think that's what they were going for. Definitely the black and white.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you know. Right. So I think his next movie is a remake of Seventh Seal. I'm not sure.
And that will do it for another episode of the podcast. We appreciate you joining us. The Sweet Feathery Jesus podcast is heard on Revere Radio Network. You can find that at revereradio.net. We're on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock Eastern. Thanks, Rob Revere, again, for adding us to your network. The Sweet Feathery Jesus podcast is available in iTunes, so you can just look it up by looking up Sweet Feathery Jesus in the podcast store. You can email me, Belasco@sweetfeatheryjesus.com, and please make sure you visit our message boards at sweetfeatheryjesus.com. We appreciate you taking the time to listen, and we hope you all have enjoyed this podcast in the same proportion that we hated the movie. It really was a dreadful piece of crap. Be on the lookout on the forum, because we're going to be setting up another voting thread for you to vote on the next movie that the panelists have to watch. We will see you next time.